This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of Treasures in the Dark, 90 Reflections on Finding Bright Hope Hidden in the Hurting, written and narrated by Catherine Wolfe, and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
I even remember Michael Phelps coming up to me saying, "Hey, Josh, we really want you to be ready for that relay." And I thought, I'm really not recovering like I used to. I'm not swimming as fast as I used to. And then on the other side, I've got people calling me to come speak at churches and youth groups, and I'm getting paid to tell people about Jesus and teach kids to swim better. And I'm really torn. Do I go to practice and get really tired and depressed, or do I go tell people about Jesus and go teach kids swimming and provide for my family?
I'm Morgan Ling, and you are listening to Quick to Listen. I'm an assistant editor here at Christianity Today, and today I am joined by senior editor of Christianity Today, Ted Olson.
I am so excited about this, Morgan. This is going to be really fun. It has been so fun talking about the Olympics with you, and now we have like two really good people to talk about this with.
It's a pretty big deal.
It is. Okay, so first up, we have Tim Ellsworth. He has covered the Olympics, four different Olympics, and just got back from Rio, where he's been covering the Olympic Games there for Baptist Press. Along with David Bodaya, he just came out with this book, Greater Than Gold, From Olympic Heartbreak to Ultimate Redemption. It's about the gold medalist diver's life and faith. He is also at Union University, where he directs communications in Jackson, Tennessee. Really awesome to have him. I've been reading a lot of his work over like years, ever since I was rounding up news for Christianity Today, reading his Olympics coverage. We also have an actual Olympian. Josh Davis is a five-time Olympic medalist. He was the only man from any country at the 1996 Atlanta Games to win three gold medals, which is amazing. He was the U.S. swim team captain at the 2000 Sydney Games. He won two silvers there, and he's now heading up the men's and women's swimming programs at Oklahoma Christian University. And guys, we are like jumping out of our chairs. We're so excited to have you here.
Great to be with you guys.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Where are you guys both calling us from?
Go ahead, Tim.
I am calling from Jackson, Tennessee, from my office at Union University.
And if we talked to you a couple days ago, where would you have been calling us from?
I would have been calling from Rio a couple of days ago. I was there for the first few days of the Olympics and just got home yesterday about 11 o'clock a.m.
Nice.
Any like opening remarks about how Rio is as a city?
Rio was great. It's my first time to be there. It was an interesting city. It was, I think in some ways, you know, it's easy to compare it to other cities that you've been to with Olympics, you know, London and Beijing. I think there's some ways in which Rio kind of lagged behind those other cities, but you know, it's a great city with a great culture, and it was a lot of fun to be there.
Josh, where are you calling us from?
I'm in Edmond, Oklahoma, where we've been living for 4 years. I'm originally from San Antonio, Texas, and I usually go to the Olympics, but my wife and I have a new baby, a 3-month-old Sophia, who met Boomer Phelps the other day at Olympic trials.
Nice.
They were born a week apart, so we're hoping that Boomer Phelps and little Sophia Davis can be buddies someday. So my life is a little crazy because I have five teenagers and a newborn.
That's awesome.
Not crazy at all, right? Wow. Well, thank you guys both so much for joining us today. We're really, really, really psyched, like Ted said, that you're here. We're going to talk about the Olympics right now. It's been going on. We're in our second week. Everyone has seen all the headlines about Usain Bolt, Michael Phelps, Katie Ledecky, Simone Biles, at least if you follow the American coverage of the games. Almost all of those people are American stars. And we've also gotten a chance to get a little, you know, about Brazil a little bit more and see some of their really fun celebrations, whether it was them defeating the Americans in beach volleyball earlier this week or winning medals in gymnastics, which is probably one of my favorite celebrations of the entire games, was watching their men win silver and bronze on floor exercise earlier this week. Before we get in with our gut check and our in-depth discussion at the Olympics, I just want to let everyone know, all of our listeners know, that Quick to Listen is made possible by subscribers of Christianity Today magazine. So thank you all who subscribe to us and subscribe to this podcast. Our magazine offers redemptive and honest coverage of people, events, and ideas shaping the church and culture, and that includes the Olympics. I actually wrote a piece about the Olympics a couple weeks ago. As a subscriber to our publication, you are going to get 10 award-winning print issues, and you'll get access to all of our archives on the site and to all of our articles that are online. So a huge array of information right there. You can get all of this for $10 a year. This is made possible by going to orderct.com/quicktolisten. So orderct.com/quicktolisten. And that's what makes you eligible to get all of this for $10. So let's do our gut check. The gut check that I want everyone to do this week is to go back to a race from earlier this week where we had Allison Felix, who is one of the most decorated Olympians out there. She's a track and field star, and she had won the 400 and the 200 meters in London, and she was trying to do the same here in the Rio Olympics. She did not qualify for the 200 meters in the Olympic trials, so she only had the 400 meter race. And for those of you that did not watch, the race was incredibly intense, and Allison Felix was there at the finish line. And as she was about to cross the finish line, Shawnee Miller, who had been leading for most of the race, dove across the finish line at the last second. It's an incredible moment. Everyone should go watch that. But some people had issues with this diving thing. So does anyone want to tell me how they felt about that if they had a chance to watch that, which I think everyone did?
Josh, let's let the Olympian go first.
Yeah, well, I've been a big fan of Allison Felix for 8 years now. She was in a little book I put together of Christian Olympians, and she was one of the most delightful to interview. And that was in 2007 that I interviewed her, and the depth of her faith and the genuineness of her was quite impressive. And now to see her dominance on the world level these last, 08, 2012, and now 2016 is truly amazing. And obviously she had her heart set on getting that gold. Everything was pointed towards that to repeat as gold medalist, but she's overcome several injuries this year. She's overcome several deaths in the family and just within the last couple of months. And so I think for her to get that silver was huge. And obviously she was heartbroken. And I was pleased that this morning on the interviews, she was smiling again. She was, you could sense that she's praising God despite her disappointment. But I have a feeling she was pretty heartbroken and needed to mourn last night, because the death of a dream is like the death of a loved one. You got to mourn, you got to grieve, you got to get it out. And I have a feeling she did that with family last night and is now her usual cheery, grateful self. But what a great career she's had.
I guess my gut check was I was intensely aware of the effect of being an American, or just being the same nationality as one of the competitors is. Watching that, I said, I feel the way I feel about this because we're from the same country and I'm rooting for Team USA. And I'm sure if I had been, from the Caribbean, or even just maybe not from America and wanting to see America taken down a peg, then like my perspective would be totally, totally different on that race. And also a little bit annoyed with all the commentary about, oh, just a silver. Like, silver's pretty awesome.
All right, Tim?
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, she didn't do anything against the rules. The goal is to get across the finish line first. If that's what you have to do in order to win the race, then so be it. It stinks for Allison Felix. I was rooting for her. Like Josh said, she's been just such a gracious example and role model for so many people. I wanted her to win that gold, but she came up just a little bit short. I think that there was nothing wrong with it. I don't think it was dirty. I don't think it was cheap. I think it's just the way that the race played out. And I don't have any criticism of Miller for doing that.
Yeah, I don't think she meant to dive, and I don't think it actually helped her. I think if she would have stayed up straight running like normal, she probably would have been a couple hundredths faster. But if the dive works, so be it. It just hurts when you land.
Is there an equivalent to the dive in swimming?
Nobody's ever touched with their head or their chest. But you know what's interesting? In the Paralympics, some of the athletes have to do that. And we give great props and respect to those Paralympic athletes that have to touch with something other than their hand. And we have great respect for them.
I felt disappointed for Allison, but I also kind of like loved what Shaunae Miller did. I thought it was gutsy to the extent that she was like trying to dive and didn't just kind of like trip into the across the finish line. I thought it was a really gutsy move. And I also was confused about some of the, there were some headlines that talked about Allison redeeming herself or not redeeming herself. And I didn't know what exactly she had to redeem herself from, because she hadn't really done anything that would put her in a position where she would have to like come back from something. I guess redeem to me implies that there was some sort of transgression, where to me it seemed like life and unfortunate things happened to her.
And actually, Tim and Josh, I'm interested in your guys' take on that, because, you know, Tim, you've written this book that actually uses the word redemption in the title. And Josh, I'm sure this was discussed a lot in your career. If you did like a count of the word redemption in Olympics coverage, I mean, it comes up, well, in any kind of sports coverage, just comes up all the time. And I'm wondering, like, what do you guys make of that word as Christians when it means something like did better in this race than in their previous race?
Well, I think in Allison's case, you know, she might have had some off years at the world championship level and wanted to kind of shine one last time at the Olympic level, which in a way, that's kind of some redemption, that she's still deserving of, you know, winning a gold medal. But obviously, for her personal life, she's pretty spotless and doesn't necessarily need, I don't think she needs to use the word redemption. But I will say, on Michael Phelps' behalf, he's gone through some very dark times the last several years. And his turnaround, what he's gone through emotionally, spiritually, personally, morally, has been, I'd categorize that as redemption.
I think the same thing, you know, with David Bedaya. You know, I can really only speak from that perspective of working with him on this book for the past several months. But his story is one of absolute redemption. And it has nothing to do with how he fared in the Olympics. It has everything to do with the fact that he was a sinner. He was lost. His life was hopeless. He was in tremendous anguish and despair over the state of his soul. And the Lord reached down and rescued him from that pit and from the depths of those despair, of that despair, and gave him new life in Christ. And so, and he has that regardless of how he, you know, whether he won a gold medal at the Olympics or not. And that's something, you know, that is the title of the book, Greater Than Gold. That's exactly what it is for him. And so that's what his redemption is, you know, redemption and new life in Christ, regardless of his performance in the Olympics.
There is, you know, a narrative that I do keep kind of encountering, and I don't know if it's particularly true in kind of Christian media narratives, or if this is more broadly applicable, this idea that, you know, someone wins gold and then after that they kind of have a crisis, or at least a soul searching moment, or kind of a letdown. Josh, as you know, someone who's had, you know, 3 gold medals, I am curious, you know, is that a fairly common thing to have, like, post-Olympic letdown?
I think everybody experiences it to varying degrees, but there is a letdown. You know, when you come off a church retreat or a church camp or a summer project or a mission trip, and you come back to the regular world and you're like, oh man, you know, you're kind of like leaving heaven, leaving an emotional high. And so obviously the Olympic Village is a little bit like heaven. I mean, especially if you're winning medals and doing really well. For me, though, what relieved some of that letdown is I shared my gold medals with so many kids and so many groups, and spoke to kids and was giving of myself and sharing it. And so I've been on the road for, you know, 16 years now, passing around the gold medals, telling kids about Jesus, encouraging them in their sports, and pursuing excellence and being strong of mind, body, spirit. You know, I love sharing that. So I never really had a big, big low, but even I had a little bit of one, but not to the depths of some athletes go to. But I think some athletes come home with their gold medal and just kind of put it in the safety deposit box and just expect sponsors and people to start a calling. And sometimes that doesn't happen. You really kind of have to go out and start giving of yourself and get ingrained in community and society in a healthy way to avoid the letdown.
David Bedaya would agree with that too, that he went through a time of letdown after he won the gold medal in the 2012 Olympics, because even though he had become a believer, and even though in 2012 he knew that a gold medal was not the pinnacle of his existence and not the most precious thing in his life, I think there was still a part of him that, in winning that gold, that he thought that would bring a sense of satisfaction to his life that he didn't have otherwise. And he gets back home and gets back into his routine. And, you know, nothing has really changed that much. There are a lot of demands on his time that he wasn't expecting. One of the things that he had to deal with was all of the media and just this temptation to put yourself at the center of everything. So it was really a challenge for him and a trial for him to die to self and to remember who he was in Christ. And that's really what helped him get through that, along with the counsel of some wise leaders from his church.
Both of you guys have a much closer glimpse of the Olympics than a lot of us Americans stateside do. What are some of the biggest misconceptions that the public has about the games that you guys especially think should be kind of cleared up or exposed?
I think in the Olympic Village, it's actually pretty clean, pretty organized, pretty pleasant area. You know, it's incredibly secure within the village. The food is great. And, you know, visiting with other countries is just so cool. And being in the USA dormitory is wonderful because you're with all the other athletes from all the other sports and you run into them in the halls and you run into them in the dining hall and it's kind of fun. And, you know, but outside the village, you do have to just be careful. Like every big city in the world, there's places you go and places you don't go. But everybody is really kind of pretty normal in the Olympic Games.
It's a more even playing field, right?
Yeah. You know, everybody's pretty regular, just trying to do their job. And, you know, when they go home to just, you know, kind of regular stuff. And most Olympians hardly make anything, you know, have to work part time or, you know, get creative with how they raise funds and get sponsors. So it's not very glamorous. The other 3.9 years of the quadrennium, but this 2 weeks, they try and soak it up and really enjoy the free stuff and the publicity.
Yeah, I'd agree with that assessment. I think especially about when it comes to the athletes, and we see them on TV for a 2 week period, and we're as a culture kind of obsessed with the Olympics and with the athletes that we're seeing competing, and we have to remind ourselves that a lot of these people, you know, Michael Phelps is the exception. Michael Phelps is not the norm for the people who are competing in the Olympics, and they do have to work hard, and they do labor in relative obscurity most of the time, with the exception of that 2 week period when they're in the national spotlight, and then they can go back and, you know, go back to being anonymous for a large part, and their life is not a whole lot different than the rest of us.
Life is unpredictable. I think all of us learn that. Sometimes we learn it in good ways. Sometimes we learn it in really hard ways. You're valuable to Christianity Today, and we want you to be prepared and protected. And one of the ways that that can happen is by having a will and getting a will together for your family and to care for your loved ones. If you've already set up your will and other important estate planning documents, that's great. But if you haven't, Christianity Today has partnered with Epic Will to easily and affordably walk you through the whole process of creating a legally binding and state-specific will in as little as 10 minutes. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to take this vital step, and you can get started today by visiting morect.com/will. That's more with just one O. ct.com/will. And for a limited time, you can get 10% off. That's morect.com/will.
I'm wondering if you guys can talk a little bit about balance when it comes to sports and training for that sport, being devoted to that sport, and how people balance family or faith, and also trying to be one of the best in the world at their given sport.
Well, I know for me, I was really blessed to marry my wife, my college sweetheart, when we were in college, which was kind of crazy. My fifth year, her junior year, we decided to just go for it and get married. I mean, I was living poor with some guys and she was living poor with some girls. I thought, let's just live poor together. We got married and God really blessed it. You know, she was a volleyball player. And so she knew the rigors of my schedule and we supported each other and cooked meals together as she was training for college volleyball and I was training for the Olympics. And I go to Atlanta and God was really gracious and got 3 gold medals for America. And we come back home and, you know, the world changed a little bit where I had the opportunities to speak and travel and write and, you know, give clinics to kids and make a business out of this. And so she was very business minded. And so she was a huge help in helping me do that. And I found a real good agent, and that created some great balance and wisdom. And then we had 3 kids in 4 years.
Wow.
Actually 3 kids in 3 years. So I showed
up. Like my family.
Yeah. So I showed up to, I tell everybody my wife is the real Olympian, because she gave us a total of 5 kids in 8 years. And those first 3 were back to back each year. And I left her for Sydney for my second Olympics with a 2-year-old, a 1-year-old, and a 2-day-old.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she did more work during that Olympics than you did.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm in Sydney, Australia, the swim crazy country of Australia. I'm captain of the USA team. I break the American record. I'm getting free massages and free food and being on live global TV, you know, leading the USA team. And my wife's at home with the 3 babies. Of course, as soon as swimming's done, I race on the first plane home back. I don't get to party the second week like all the other swimmers. I got to hurry back home.
To see your 9-day-old.
I got to. And yeah. So I get to the front door, and she greets me there with one of the babies with a loaded diaper and says, "Your turn." So I'm watching the Olympics, the second week of the Olympics, you know, track and field and basketball. I'm watching on my sofa carrying 2 babies covered in spit. You know, I haven't slept in days. And I'm like, this is really weird. I was just over there winning gold medals, feeling immortal. And now I'm not sleeping, holding all these babies covered in spit up. I mean, this is really weird. But I'm so glad I went home to help my wife. And I'm so glad that she was able to create that balance for me to achieve success in the pool as a business and as a life partner. So I'm really thankful that I didn't have to put too many things on hold, you know, like getting a spouse, getting a house, starting a family. I actually think I got faster because of those things, because of that balance. And so just marry a great spouse is what you got to do.
Do you find that the challenge of, you know, how much time to devote to training or the time to devote to this, you know, sport in general versus the time to devote to work and kind of the post Olympic life? How do those interrelate? Are they similar challenges? Are they really different challenges? One being a season and one being kind of the rest of your working life?
Oh, absolutely. With the 4th and 5th kid coming pretty close after that. Can I go? And I'm getting older. I'm now 32, getting ready for 2004 Athens Olympics. And I even remember Michael Phelps coming up to me saying, "Hey, Josh, we really want you to be ready for that relay. You know, you can be a real help on that relay with us," because he was getting fast. He had just broken my American record, and I thought, I'm really not recovering like I used to. I'm not swimming as fast as I used to. And then on the other side, I've got people calling me to come speak at churches and youth groups, and I'm getting paid to tell people about Jesus and teach kids to swim better, and I'm, you know, inspire people. Like, I'm really torn. Do I go to practice and get really tired and depressed, or do I go tell people about Jesus and go, you know, teach kids swimming and provide for my family? So I began to really be torn and kind of lost sight of what my, you know, ultimate goal was, and that was to compete in another Olympic Games. And so I had to learn the hard way, where I didn't make all my practices and I didn't make the Olympic team. And so I still suffer with a little regret. Like, what if I had just, you know, saved all the Christian talks and swim clinics for after the Olympics? You know, could I have made the team? Could I have contributed and done the one more games, a third games with Michael? I really don't know. I try not to dwell on it too much because, you know, God's blessed us in so many ways. I'm not that worried about it. But I do believe an athlete has to fully commit if that's what God calls them to do. If they're called to train for the Olympics, you've got to fully commit and really have wise counsel and community helping you navigate that.
Tim, did you see any of these questions play out in David's life?
One of the things that helped David when it came to his preparation for the Olympics, this kind of echoes what Josh said, was his family. Because after the 2012 Olympics, he got married, and they had a daughter here a couple of years ago. He went through a time after London where diving just didn't have the same allure that it did before, where he was just kind of tired of it. He wasn't sure he wanted to keep doing it, but it was his commitment to his family, especially after his daughter was born, that really was a spark for him and rejuvenated him, because he recognized that his role as a husband and as a father was to provide for his family. And he knew that diving and diving well was the best way for him to do that at this chapter in his life. And so that really kind of sparked him to get back in the pool and to keep working harder than he had before, just because he was motivated as a dad and as a husband to provide for them. And so I certainly think that goes along with his Christian commitment and his understanding of what it means to be a godly husband and a godly dad. And I think that goes right along with what Josh was saying.
I think even Michael Phelps has experienced a little daddy power this season, swimming kind of for his fiance and his kid. You just there's another level of gratefulness and love and motivation that you didn't have before.
One of the things that always comes up with every Olympics is the old chariots of fire line. You know, I feel God's pleasure when I run, which apparently Eric Liddell did not actually say, but is classic line nevertheless. But I'm curious, when you watch the games on TV now or in person, but when you're not in a competitor mode, when you're in either journalist mode or viewer mode, is there a moment where you kind of feel God's pleasure, or where you kind of feel Christian theology or spirituality is particularly on display? Is it in the people doing, you know, great athletic feats that God has empowered them to do? Is it in kind of humble responses to winning? Is it in, you know, some sort of act of service that you see? Where are you like, man, that is a Christian moment at the Olympics right there?
I think when an athlete is doing something that sets them apart from the rest of the world, it's easy as Christians to say, wow, that person really has a gift. Whether they acknowledge it or not, whether they understand who gave them that gift or not, it's easy for us to see. So that's fun for me from a Christian perspective. But I'm really most impressed, though, when I see the evidence of a changed heart, when God has changed a selfish heart into a giving heart, a heart like his that loves unconditionally, even their fiercest rivals. To me, that is divine and a miracle too. So when I see several athletes like Missy Franklin or our captain Elizabeth Beisel, who didn't have the meet they wanted, but still cheer on their other teammates, or still helping lead cheers, still serving the team, that may be a bigger miracle than, or as big a miracle as, some of the athletes who, you know, obviously have an incredible gift to do what they do.
Yeah, I think that that you can see those echoes and those examples of Christ in our faith in a lot of different ways. I just wrote a story about Krista Dietzen, who plays on the women's volleyball team, and she talks about how, as a Christian athlete, one of the ways that she expresses that is by loving her teammates well. And she talks about what that means, having, you know, people over to her house and you know, to have meals with her and her husband and getting to know them and finding ways, looking for ways to be an encouragement to them. So I think that's one way that Christian athletes can really reflect a changed heart, is in how they treat others. I think we see an example of it even today in the women's 5,000 meter race, where you had this runner from New Zealand, Nikki Hamblin, who stumbled and fell, and Abby D'Agostino, you know, fell over her as well, and they were laying there on the track, and Abby, who I understand is been involved in Fellowship of Christian Athletes at Dartmouth. I don't know a whole lot about her faith, but I've seen enough to know that she is involved in some Christian groups there. And she was hurting, and she helps Nikki get up, and she encourages her and says, "Hey, come on, we've got to finish this race. This is the Olympics. Let's keep going." You know, what a model, an example of service that comes from a heart that's been changed by the gospel, rather than just wallowing in self-pity and thinking, "Oh, this really stinks that this happens to me." You know, he or she takes the opportunity to turn a bad situation into something good. And I think that's a great example.
I mentioned I've been acutely aware of my Americanness watching this, especially as I've kind of alternated between watching NBC and watching a little bit of CBC coverage and some other countries' coverage. Had a friend from Kenya over the other night, and he says, man, it is really hard as a Kenyan to watch NBC because you only ever see the American athletes. You know, I'm not a terribly patriotic guy most of the time. I definitely care intensely about the Team USA person in each race. I'm curious if you, A, know of any really interesting Christian athletes who are not on Team USA that might be worth watching, and B, if you know if there's any kind of camaraderie among Christian athletes across national teams.
I know Nick Willis from New Zealand, you know, is a runner who's a believer. I've written about a few athletes over the years who are from other countries and who are believers. But predominantly, it's Americans. For one thing, it's just access. It's easier to have access to Team USA athletes for me than it is athletes from other countries. And so that's why it's not that I have anything against people from other countries. I certainly would entertain the idea of featuring them and writing on them if I'm aware of them and if I can get in touch with them. But it just so happens that it's easier to do that with Americans.
Yeah, the Olympic Village always has a chaplaincy. Unfortunately, the governing body determines who the chaplains are and the denomination that gets to kind of run that chaplaincy. When I visited the Sydney chaplain, they had a couple guys in there, yet they weren't able to hand out Bibles and they weren't able to talk about Jesus. So what happened is a lot of Christians gathered on their own. And it just so happened at the Sydney Olympics, the South African dorm had a big, nice big lobby and offered a daily Bible study. And there was about 50, 60 athletes from all different countries that would show up and sing some songs and talk about a verse and, you know, discuss and then pray for each other and then split and then go back out. And they did that every day. And then Beijing 08, the Bahamas, the Bahamians ended up hosting the Bible study. I know in London had a lot of good Bible studies. And then now in 2016, you know, they're all over in little pockets around the village. So I personally have been close with a lot of Australian Christians. And now I've heard some great stories about some Australian Christians now and some of the American Christian swimmers connecting with the Australian Christian swimmers.
Well, thank you so much for this really lively discussion and giving all these insights. I was definitely sitting here being like, I didn't know that. And I didn't know that. So great stuff, guys. Before we move on to the next segment, Precious Moments, I just want to let everyone know that you are welcome to give us feedback. We would love to have our segment, Slow to Speak, where we give shout outs to everyone who has thoughts about this. So if you have anything related to the Olympics that you want us to know or that you're happy got pointed out or you want to expand on, please do that. You can go on Twitter at CT Podcasts or on Facebook at facebook.com/CT Podcasts, and you can leave that there. We're happy to read it aloud and to share it here on the podcast next week. So, yes, now is the time that we're going to do Precious Moments, which is when we go around the room and we get people to talk about something that is bringing them joy. And sometimes that thing that's bringing them joy has a theme. And share your where people can find you online, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or a website. So the prompt this week is, if you knew you would not win the gold medal or even end up on the podium, what Olympic sport would you compete in? Josh, do you want to start that one off?
Well, I got to be honest, before I started swimming, when I was 12 years old, I did pole vault.
Really?
Yeah, I was not good, but I loved it. And there's just this incredible joy when you clear the bar and you experience that little moment of flying.
What was the highest that you got?
I got well, in eighth grade, I did 8.5 feet. But I came back when I was 20 years old as a junior in college. I came on the track with my decathlon roommate and I grabbed a pole. And no warm up, no practice, hadn't jumped in 4, 5 years, and I cleared 12 feet.
Wow!
So that's I was
swimming strength right there.
I had a little strength to really bend that pole and get up, and I was really proud of myself that I remembered all the little tips my track coach taught me. And to see these guys, you know, going 19 feet is just incredible to see.
The Brazilian guy that won a couple of nights ago, he cleared more like six, at least 6 inches higher than he had cleared ever before in his career.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, you should really try that one sport, that Dutch sport that combines the pole vaulting over the river. Cause I figure with your background with water and the background of pole vaulting, you would dominate that sport right there.
I like that. A safe landing for me. Yeah.
Where can people find you online?
Yeah. So joshdavis.com is easy to find out about if people need talks for their churches or youth groups or corporate groups or civic groups or schools or swim clubs. And that's my main vocation, is teaching at swim clubs. And our tour, I run a tour of Olympians. I contract out 30 other swimming Olympians to join me on a 100-city tour. We visit cities all over America, and it's breakoutswimclinic.com, breakoutswimclinic.com. If people want to buy the Olympic book of Olympic Christian testimonies, it's The Goal and the Glory. And I'm really just engrossed watching the Olympics and staring at my three-month-old girl.
Awesome. All right, Tim, let's hear it.
Well, I've been laboring over the answer to this question, and I think if I had to choose a sport, I would probably choose table tennis, because even if I couldn't win a gold medal in that, just making it to the Olympics would mean that I was good enough to dominate all of my friends.
Right, totally.
Yeah, you know, I'd be the university champion in ping pong.
The most popular guy at parties.
Yeah, yeah. And so I am online at timellsworth.com, TimElsworth.com. Post some writings there occasionally. Most of my stories from the Olympics, actually all my stories from the Olympics, are available on Baptist Press's website at bpnews.net. And I've still got more stories coming this week. Then I'm on Twitter at Tim Ellsworth, if anybody wants to follow me there as well.
Fantastic. I'm Ted Olson, at Ted Olson. You can find me at christianitytoday.com and behemothmag.com, which is a sister publication of Christianity Today about awe and wonder. So in 1988, I was not going from, I think, junior high to high school at that stage, and the men's water polo team was practicing at my high school, and it was amazing just to watch those guys do their stuff. And that is just a sport that I have like no hope of ever, like, even just treading water for that long, let alone actually playing a major sport. That's just, you know, the aspirational part of it is where I would probably be. Although maybe horse dressage, because if I could compete in it, I would actually understand what it is I'm watching, because I have tried. You know that I have tried.
We watched the Santana horse dressage, if you guys missed that.
I have tried to understand that sport, and I just cannot tell what I'm supposed to be watching.
I think the sport that I would pick, I said handball.
Yeah.
I really like watching the handball games. I find them very fast and speedy, but I also am really bad at everything related to handball, which is like hand-eye coordination and catching the ball as opposed to ducking from it. So I would go for handball. Also, the U.S. is not anywhere near competitive in handball, so I don't even know if I would be able to make the team for my country. And people can find me at MEPAYNL. Well, that is it for this week. I think you were all warned last week that there would be a lot more Olympic coverage. So thank you everyone for loving this. I hope this show is made possible by our producers, Richard Clark and Cray Allred. Special thanks to Kate Shelnett. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Overcast. If you like the show, please make sure to rate and review us on iTunes. That is super helpful to us, and we will see you all next week when Caitlin will be back.